Good afternoon, podcast listeners. This is Kevin Eva again from Medical Education. I am sitting in Vancouver on Wednesday, February 15th, and have the pleasure of speaking with Robin Basu-Roy, who is currently Pediatric Academic Clinical Fellow at Imperial College in London. But we're going to talk about some of the research that he conducted while completing his master's in the Harvard Graduate School of Education. Just to add to the multinational flavor, I have the good fortune of connecting with Robin while he's sitting in Germany, in Berlin, I understand. Thank you, Robin, for making the time in your busy 2 weeks over in Germany.
Thank you for taking the time to talk to me.
My pleasure. I'm happy for the opportunity. You have a paper coming out in the April issue of Medical Education 2012 entitled Video-Based Cases Disrupt Deep Critical Thinking in Problem-Based Learning. I realize that your goal with this paper isn't to discount or discredit the use of videos in problem-based learning, but maybe before we get to some of those issues, I could just ask you to elaborate on how you and others have been using videos to try to support those sorts of educational activities.
Of course, yes. This project came about in collaboration with my co-author, Professor Graham McMahon at Harvard Medical School, who's also the New England Journal of Medicine's editor for medical education. And he is involved in the endocrine pathophysiology course at the Harvard Medical School. And for the last few years, him and his course co-directors have been using video in their problem-based learning sessions during that course. What they did was they mapped out the course objectives that they wanted to achieve during this module, and those included things like endocrine physiology, pathology, and treatments. And then they sought out patients from the clinics of the various people teaching on the course who fulfilled those criteria, and then did a structured interview with a physician interviewing the patient, eliciting the history over the patient's clinical course, obviously with full informed consent from the patients for use in teaching materials. Mm-hmm. And so in this course, they use these videos in quite a dynamic way. So they're broken up into different sections, and at various points, it's a natural opportunity for students to review the investigations at that point, or any imaging, blood results, and so forth, and then return to the next chunk of the video case. Yeah, it's quite a dynamic system that they use.
So these are typically centered around patient problems then, and it sounds like a way of trying to bring the advantages of real patient interaction to the masses, so to speak, because some of the struggles are always getting the right patients to a group of people at the right time in lifetime, and then struggling with how they might be able to interact with a large group of students. Was that the main motivation behind the innovation?
Exactly, yes. The ideal behind the use of video and PBL at the Harvard Medical School endocrine pathophysiology course was to both convey the content of the curriculum, but at the same time give a more patient-centered approach to it all, to simulate real-life encounters. So this is a real doctor talking to a real patient, so therefore you get a holistic portrayal, you get a sense of doctor's communication skills, and you also give the patient a real voice. So it's not just a question of the patient reading off their list of symptoms and so forth. There's also some discussion around their experience and the way they felt, which is particularly pertinent for this course, and in fact the cases were used in the study, because one of the patient cases was of subfertility associated with polycystic ovarian syndrome, so obviously had a big impact on her, the prospects of whether or not she could or couldn't have children, her relationship with her husband and so forth. And the other case we used was delayed puberty in a male who had Kallmann syndrome. So again, there was some discussion around what it was like growing up, being in changing rooms, going through adolescence, when he wasn't going through the same changes of puberty as his peers.
Right, okay. And so the students and faculty or tutors who participated in your study clearly liked the videos, but there must have been something that prompted you to have some questions about how effective they were, given the nature of the question that you raise about whether or not they disrupt deep critical thinking. What was the motivation that got you looking at those variables in the first place?
Well, I think part of it is that, as I'm sure are aware, and in general, new technologies, video, multimedia, tend to be very attractive to both students and often to teachers. And in the first part of the study, chronologically, there was a cohort survey, and it came out as very preferable. But one of the issues with some of these techniques is that preference doesn't necessarily say anything about learning and the cognitive processes that the students are going through. So we just wanted to supplement what we'd already seen in terms of preference with a more quantifiable and objective, as best we could, measure of the impact that it was having on cognitive processes. And to be honest, before we carried out the study, there wasn't any particular reason to think it was going to be one way or the other. We just thought it was an interesting question that hadn't been analyzed in cases where video is being used for these more patient-centered holistic aspects rather than for physical signs. For instance, some of the previous papers have looked at children having seizures or focal episodes, and in that case, there's an obvious reason to use video because video can convey these things in a way that text never could. Mm-hmm. And we just wanted to look at it in a slightly different context for the use of video and see if there were any differences there. And the results was very striking.
Yeah, they were quite striking. I'm going to ask you to share those with the listeners in a second, but just before I do that, maybe I can get you to clarify what the outcomes were that you collected in conducting the study.
Of course. As I've already mentioned, one part of it was surveys to cohort students and tutors that were doing it, looking for their preferences and their self-reported thoughts on level of stimulation, enjoyment, and so on. And then the second part, we did a randomized crossover study where we got four groups of students, each of which had seven students and one tutor. Two of those groups were given a video case first, and then for the second case, they were given a text transcript of a video. Mm-hmm. And the other two groups had the reverse allocation. So first of all, they had a text case, and then they had a video case. We audio recorded the discussions during the problem-based learning tutorials, and then transcribed them and broke them down into utterances where each utterance was basically a sentence or a phrase. And then we coded those utterances using a coding scheme that came from computer science learning and has been adapted for medical education and applied there by the group of Carol Kamen. You code something as either being problem identification, problem description, problem exploration, or applicability. And these are all five different key domains in critical thinking. And within each of those domains, you code something as superficial or as deep. So at the end of all this, you can have a sense of what proportion of the discussion was deep critical thinking rather than superficial critical thinking. And that was our main outcome measure.
Okay, and that was the main outcome measure where you seemed to find some fairly substantial differences as well. What was the key result for you that made you think that others should know about this research?
The most striking thing was that overall, if you looked at all of the things that were said in the problem-based tutorials by the students, and if you compared the odds ratio for deep critical thinking for video versus text, the odds ratio came out as 0.66 for deep thinking in video compared to text, and that had a p-value of less than 0.0001, so highly significant. And then when you looked at it domain by domain, this effect held true for problem exploration, which was the largest domain, taking up about 50% of the discussion, again with a significant decrease in the proportion of deep critical thinking when video was used rather than text.
Right, and so you said you went in without necessarily predicting that. Did it make sense to you in hindsight, or have you been in these tutorials and can you try to explain why these videos might have had that impact?
Yes, I mean, there's several potential explanations for why this could have happened. First and foremost, that there's various cognitive theories around multimedia learning, and I mean, one of the reasons we're looking at this in the first place is this multimedia principle, which is that under certain circumstances, people can learn more deeply from words and pictures than from words alone. And accompanying that, there are cognitive theories of multimedia learning that describe human information processing as involving two channels, one for visual and pictorial elements and one for auditory and verbal processing. So one of the explanations here is that we might be overloading these channels with extraneous information. So we're causing increased extraneous cognitive processing and therefore not allowing enough room for maintaining essential processing for the learning goals and generative processing for afterwards. There's also the potential that students could simply have been distracted by non-key elements of the discussion and the video that, although perhaps pertinent to the patient, were not necessarily pertinent to critical thinking and problem exploration. I think that's quite an important point because it highlights that there are some things that are important and valuable in video that wouldn't be picked up by the coding system that we employed. So we were specifically looking at critical thinking, and we showed this decrease in critical thinking with video. Therefore, we're not also at the same time able to look into measures of engagement or retention or objective measures of enjoyment, stimulation, psychosocial aspects, what the students taking part took home with them from their perspective on patient experiences. So although we've demonstrated that there is this decrease in critical thinking in our particular context, there are other aspects of multimedia learning that we haven't captured in this particular study.
Right. So that raises the possibility that there are some substantial advantages to the video that perhaps just weren't captured. So I wonder if I can just ask you to wrap up our conversation by offering the insights you've gained in terms of, if our listeners are hoping to do something like this, how might you counsel them to try to take advantage of some of those advantages you see while also trying to minimize what appear to be some disruptions that may have a negative impact?
Well, I think the main message here is that educators really need to carefully think about their particular objectives and goals for their particular course, and then really individualize the teaching and learning strategies that they're using for that. I guess the main message is that multimedia and video and new technology isn't always better, and that there can be advantages and disadvantages. In terms of what the educators listening to this might be thinking of, it's really a case of thinking about what message are you conveying with your multimedia. Is it something that can only be done with multimedia, such as showing a dynamic physical sign, or is it something that could be equally well done in text? If your project involves several different aspects, then obviously video might work well for certain components, while sort of more conventional techniques might work better for other aspects. So I think the key point here is that you really need to critically think about which techniques will work best for your particular goal. And the other message is that there's clearly so much to be learnt about the use of multimedia in medical education. And hopefully this paper will simulate some debate, but also highlight the need for further studies looking at whether or not multimedia affects retention of facts. So although during the study they were showing decreased critical thinking, perhaps if we were to follow them up so many months afterwards, they would remember the case and the key points better because they were so much more engaged in it. And that at the moment is a hypothesis and needs to be followed up with more educational research.
Thanks very much. It's a very interesting paper, and your comment about using it to stimulate discussion is a timely one because, as I think I've mentioned in recent podcasts in this series, as I'm recording this, we are just on the verge of going live with discussion boards at medical education and giving people a chance to respond to authors and send them some new ideas and engage with other colleagues in the community who are interested in specific issues and trying to find some collaborators and some debate around some of these issues. So I will encourage people to go to www.mededuc.com and click the discuss link, and there will be a discussion thread set up specifically for this paper that people can go and share some thoughts. And Robin, if you have any responses to any of the things that are written there, you're obviously more than welcome to engage in that discussion as well.
Yeah, I mean, it will be really fascinating to see what people think. I guess the other key point here is that this paper isn't saying that you shouldn't use video at all. It's just saying that in certain contexts, it can have impacts on certain aspects of learning. Negative consequences here, but there may well be positive consequences elsewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. I congratulate you on the work and look forward to seeing what comes next, and hope that the 2 weeks you're spending in Germany with collaborators are as productive as the time you spent in Massachusetts.
Great. Thank you very much for taking the time.
I'll just remind the listeners that the paper I've been discussing with Robin Basu-Roy, who's the first author, is entitled Video-Based Cases Disrupt Deep Critical Thinking and Problem-Based Learning, and you'll find it in the April 2012 issue of Medical Education. Thank you all, and until next time, I'll sign off.